No, I can, yeah, I can feel my nose beginning to drip. I don't know if I'm going to be emotional, but I know I'm going to be a little bit snotty, so we're going to get rid of this. You know, unless you want to watch me wipe it on my sleeve or something, which would be just repulsive. So I'm a sober woman now. I don't act like that anymore. You know, I try to conduct myself with a little more dignity, so here we go. I guess, again, we'll begin with the qualification. I am Leslie Gray. I am an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. And so, therefore, I qualify to speak at an AA meeting. And in order to speak at this meeting, they ask you to have 30 years of continuous sobriety or more. And I had my last drink February 23rd, 1981. So I qualify under that category as well. So that, with that out of the way, I want to say too, I kind of struggled in preparing for this week. I don't know why. I'm kind of struggling with everything. I struggled getting here. I was going to do some. It just, I don't know. Today, you know, this week has just been a little bit weird. But anyway, the ninth step is about making direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So this step, this is, now we're done to, you know, we hear, how many times have we heard about cleaning up the wreckage of the past? Now we're here. This is it. This is when we start to clean up the mess we made. You know, why would we do this? Why would we do this? You know, one of the reasons is so we don't drink again, so that we're okay. But I'm going to go to the Joe McHugh book. He, if you're familiar with that, Joe McHugh, The Steps We Took, it's not, I don't think it's an official, you know, sanctioned AA book, but a lot of people use it, so I'm going to use it today. He talks about connecting guilt and remorse to ego, which was kind of an interesting concept to me. I hadn't thought about it that way before, but he talks about it. He said, sometimes I think a lot of our guilt and remorse is just our egos anyway. You know, my self-importance, my thinking I'm the center of things. But, you know, he goes on to talk about, I only had two quick thoughts. The amends are for us. They're so we get well, so that we stay well, so that we don't need to pick up a drink over those bad feelings and stuff we carry. But how he puts it is, while we need to learn to have nurturing, healthy relationships with other people, we also need to emphasize that we are not making amends for the purpose of getting people to like us. And you know, to me, that was another, wow, yeah, it certainly didn't happen for me. Not everyone likes me, even though I did my best to make amends. And he also talks about what happens if we don't go ahead and do this. He talks about the guilt, we don't get over guilt and remorse. This produces fear. Then we start to hide from people. Then we start to avoid people. And that fear starts to produce self-pity and resentment. And we all know where self-pity and resentment leads, that the chances are good that we're going to drink again or go back to whatever other compulsive behavior whatever our thing is, we go back to doing it. So that's what they say about that in that book. And it's the going to any lengths. That idea has repeated from the beginning, every step, every aspect of AA. We hear it again and again and again, to go to any lengths. Our disease is fatal. It is incurable, it's progressive, and it's fatal. And if we want to be well, we've got to be willing to go to any lengths, as much as work as we put into getting wasted and doing bad things. We got to put that same energy into staying sober and living better. This popped into my head. I use notes because it just helps keep me focused. But as I read everything, part of the why is, you know, I'm not drunk anymore. I'm starting to live better. I'm getting an idea that I have a God in my life, and that that God has been there to help me and to show me how to live better. And it's, you know, by step 8 coming to be willing, and step 9 starting to move the feet, it's time to grow up. It's time to show up. It's time to do the work. It's time to start to live up to being one of God's people that I want to be, and not just some pathetic drunk, you know, who couldn't handle things. The 12 and 12 talks more about how, you know, and a bit. And so there's a lot of step 9, and I want to go through some of it with you. But it says at first sitting, you know, I do want to say too, to work step 8 and to do step 9 requires, in my mind, a ongoing work with a sponsor, because I can run away with my own mind and what I think is right, and it ain't necessarily always right. And my thought of how to handle something appropriately, you know, on further conversation may need a little bit of tweaking, or a lot of tweaking. But at first sitting in making an amends, it's necessarily only that we make a general admission of our defects. And it talks about good judgment will suggest that we ought to take our time. I wanted to run out and, you know, sing from the rooftops, but that's not really, that's ego. You know, look at me, I'm not drunk. Like, well, big whoop, most people aren't. So, but, you know, we need to start digging deeper here. But good judgment will suggest we ought to take our time. While we may be willing to reveal the very worst, we must be sure to remember we cannot buy our own peace of mind at the expense of others. And so that's the trick. You know, it's real easy for me to maybe do something at cost to you. Like these guys voting that I'm going to give everybody $20, you know, behind my back. So, and then telling me this is an amends. But anyway. Against this background, we can admit the damage we've done. We can pay or promise to pay whatever obligations, financial or otherwise, we owe. So it's not just about saying I'm sorry. It's about doing something different. It is for me. It may begin with I'm sorry, but it's got to continue for me with ongoing better action to the best of my ability. You know, I can do the best I can do today, and hopefully when I know better, I do better. But sometimes we don't get a good reception. The book talks about the temptation to skip the more humiliating and dreaded meetings that still remain, that can be great. Okay, there's some amends that are easy and some not so much, and the 12 and 12 talks about that. But what it also says is, you know, when you read the literature that Bill wrote and that Bill and Bob together wrote, they just like cut right to the heart of it. You know, it's like they are with me, but they're not. Let's not practice prudence while practicing evasion, they tell us. Let's not talk prudence while practicing evasion. And it says the only exceptions we can make is where our disclosure will cause actual harm. They talk about beginning casually and then getting down to it. And they also, taking a lot of our steps, again, it requires courage. It requires gathering ourselves, asking for willingness, saying our prayers, and sometimes just taking ourselves by our own asses and walking in the door and doing what we need to do. And that's courage. But head straight for the person. And what the phrase they use here is, we need not wallow in excessive remorse. But amends at this level should always be forthright and generous. So, you know, while it's tempting to do the martyr thing and the I'm so awful thing, this is really not about me. It's about the harm I did and trying to convey that. There's no pat answer, you know. there's questions about not letting fear and ego stop us. And I struggled with this, like I said. In the 12 and 12, it talks about not letting fear and ego stop us. We should absolutely be sure that we are not delaying because we are afraid, for the readiness to take full consequences of our past actions and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of step 9. And that's what that growing up and stepping up is about. I've got some other things to say about that, but I want to kind of move a little to accepting amends. I made amends to my family, but I grew up in an alcoholic family, and so the things are always kind of interesting. Making my own amends was, I did them, you know. I had my meets and spoke to people and have done my best to conduct myself better, you know, to meet my obligations as a family member. But, you know, when my family, I'll tell you, I believe, very deeply affected by multi-generational alcoholism. And I mean, if I fell out of the family tree, you hit every drunk branch, you know, in my family. Like they say, some people, you fall through every stupid branch, you fall through the stupid tree, and I fall through the drunk tree. And so there's codependence and alcoholics, and, you know, that's a whole nother lead, you know, but it's always complicated because other people are sick. They're screwed up and they don't always go and work a program. Just because I do doesn't mean they do or that they have to. It means that I am me and they are them, and I live the way I do, and they may not choose to live the way I do, so it's always complicated. And I have struggled over time about what's right, how do I conduct myself, how much do I engage, what is the next right thing, because in being a part of a family does not mean I have to sacrifice myself. In being part of a friendship doesn't mean I have to sacrifice myself. It means, for me, it means I have to conduct myself in a way that a sober, responsible person would do that allows me to look at myself in the mirror. So I do right without trying to expose myself to harm. And that's kind of, I guess, all I want to say about that without getting too deep. But, you know, I had to not dodge those direct amends, you know, where I owed or where something needed to be done. But, you know, that living amends, sometimes I wonder if that's just saying I don't have the sand to go up and talk to somebody. And I have to have the sand to go up and talk to somebody. But, again, to not hurt another person. I'm going to pull up my favorite other book, As Bill Sees It, and it talks about, from the grapevine, August 1961, just how and when to tell the truth or keep silent can often reveal the difference between genuine integrity and none at all. Step 9 emphatically cautions us against misusing the truth when it states, we may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, because it points up the fact that the truth can be used to injure as well as to heal. This valuable principle certainly has a wide-ranging application to the problem of developing integrity, which is kind of why we do this stuff, or kind of why I do, so I can live as a person that I can look at myself in the mirror and be okay with myself, you know, to have my, as much as possible, and I am far from perfect at it, but you know, the striving is to have my inside convictions match my outside actions as much as possible. That's what being a person of integrity means to me, anyway. And it also talks about the consultation from the grapevine again, August of 1961. That must have been a heck of a good issue. If we are fooling ourselves, a competent advisor can see this quickly. And as he skillfully guides us away from our fantasies, we are surprised to find that we have few of the usual urges to defend ourselves against unpleasant truths. In no other way can fear, pride, and ignorance be so readily melted. After a time, we realize that we are standing firm on a brand new foundation for integrity, and we gratefully credit our sponsors whose advice pointed the way. So it's important to kind of work this through, you know, because we can, I've been told, I don't know if any of you have, because this is an old time thing, but I think it needs to be said, because some of those, you know, where someone has told me to get down off the cross, we need the wood, you know, has anyone told you that? Really? Anyone ever told you that? That's an old thing. It's an old thing, you know, but I've been told that. So, you know, this maudlin display, that's not step nine. That's me seeking attention. And that's where a sponsor, you know, can come in to start threading that needle of how to talk to people. And I want to go to the big book now because, you know, nobody's perfect and we're all drunks. So I want to just talk a little bit about Dr. Bob's amends as part of the how and why, okay? And this is in the chapter of Vision for You, and I'm just going to give you a few snippets. Because Dr. Bob, this is Dr. Bob, they're saying he, but he says, why, he argued, should he lose the remainder of his business only to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? He would do anything but that, he said. So this is when Dr. Bob is new, you know, just connected to Bill and starting to work with him, and they're figuring this thing out. And Dr. Bob was a doctor and obviously was embarrassed about facing people. And so it goes on, we skip down to, he went on a roaring bender. For him, this was the spree that ended all sprees. He saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his troubles had been. He trembled as he went about. At midnight, he came home exhausted but very happy. He has not had a drink since. And the major liabilities of 30 years of hard drinking have been repaired in 4. So he, you know, I read that to mean he told people straight up and then he lived it out. And things worked out. So, the big book also talks about how. And one of the things the book talks about is not being shy about talking about God. You know, don't be a fool. don't be an idiot. It talks about, we'd call this leading with the chin, but don't be afraid, you know, and, you know, people may be impressed by our sincere desire to right the wrongs that we've done, and that if we offer that kind of demonstration of goodwill, it can serve a good purpose. And the big book talks about, we're not thrilled about admitting our faults, and it's harder to go to an enemy, but it mentions going with a helpful and forgiving spirit and confessing our own former ill feelings. So I could be honest and say, you know, I hated you, I did this to you. Let's make this right. I want to make this right. I need to make this right. We don't get anywhere from lies. We don't. I don't get anywhere from lies, you know, speaking for myself. But it talks about, under no condition do we criticize such a person. We just tell him we'll never get over our drinking until we've done our best to get over our, to straighten out our past. And it doesn't matter if someone throws us out of our office. I've had people still don't like me. They still think, I mean, especially in my family bunch, I mean, that you're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. There's no distinction between, you know, you're a sober alcoholic or you're, you know, it just is what it is. And that's what codependency is about. But we have to make our demonstration. It talks about owing money, not hiding from our problems. Some of my biggest problems are when I try to hide from my problems. I feel sick inside. I feel sick to my stomach. It's just, things are not right until I take care of things now. See, I'm well trained in AA. It's, you know, they say it ruins your drinking, and it can ruin your bullshitting too, you know. It really can. So reminding ourselves that we've gone to any length, we ask God, we have to ask God, you know, God's always back there. We ask for willingness and strength and direction to do the right thing no matter what the personal consequences. Usually when other people are involved, we consult, like we talked about. If it's drastic, we might get consent. But, you know, it tells another story about a man who thought it's better to take those risks and take his chances and be guilty, you know, stand guilty in front of the God of his understanding. If you ever get a chance to hear Rich B., who is a conference speaker here, get a hold of his disc, listen to him, because he just laid it out so wonderfully about how free do you want to be, what lengths will you go to. If you're familiar with him, and I know he's at the State Line Retreat in Las Vegas starting like tonight, it opens up, and then I just read he's there speaking on 8 and 9, and I can't be in Vegas and here at the same time. So, anyway. The other thing it talks about is a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. And we don't want to do that. And I want to talk a little bit about my work life for just a few minutes. And I just retired, and in my work life, I interviewed inmates in prison. So I heard a whole lot of taking responsibility was part of the program. And I heard a whole lot that would be, I would barely say hello, and I would hear, I take full responsibility for that. It's like, we haven't even said hello. What do you mean, you know? And, taking responsibility isn't a word. It isn't just because you say so, you know. In my mind, it's like, that's a conclusion to be drawn based on what I see about what you have done over a period of time. Don't come in and just tell me, I take responsibility, and we'll check that box. That's BS. So when I'd hear this, and this would come in my mind, a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry does not fit the bill at all. You know, I mean, it doesn't fit the bill when you were late, you know, didn't show up for your kid's ballet lesson, and it doesn't fit the bill if you've killed somebody. So, you know, it just doesn't fit the bill. And that's a lesson to me. I talk about this because I saw a lot and learned a lot about myself and being responsible. So I share that with you. But we need to frankly analyze things and be honest. It's about living a spiritual life and reclaiming our humanity. And, you know, the books all talk about, you know, there are some situations where we can't make amends. People can't be found or whatever. Sometimes they're dead. And I want to tell a story. I hope it's appropriate, but I'm going to go ahead and tell it anyway. Because it is out of my work life. And I talked to this man And he committed a DUI homicide. And we know what that is, right? We get drunk, we drive, we hit somebody with our cars, and we kill them. And people who do that go to prison. People who do that aren't necessarily the worst people in the world. They're not criminals, but they were just criminal enough. They're alcoholic or drunk enough to pick up a drink and just criminal enough to pick up the keys of the car and disregard the law in that regard with a tragic consequence. But if we can't fix it, you know, the book talks a lot about doing what we can do to make amends, and it's about making peace. And the reason I'm telling you this story was I had talked to this man, and he paid his debt to society, and he was no trouble in lockup. You know, he was a model inmate, and he was released. And he went out and took his own life. And I've told that story as I interviewed other inmates who were similar to him. For the purpose, what I got is, I guess he couldn't find a way to make peace with it. You know, he couldn't find a way to make peace with what he did and how to go on. And yet he still gave back to the community what was owed. You know, what the law says, you have to go and spend X, you know, years in a prison. He did that. And the prison says you have to do A, B, C, D, you know, and he did that. And that was what happened. And so what that told me was, I mean, I guess he was a decent individual who couldn't face it and couldn't figure out a way to make peace with it, and maybe didn't have a God in his life to walk through it. So like I said, I've told that story to other inmates with some, I hope it made a difference to somebody. It made a difference to me. I tend to believe that none of us die in vain, and I mean, I'll carry that with me, what this man's story was. So making amends, it's a lot about reclaiming our humanity and our dignity and being connected to our higher power and being of use, you know, getting ourselves situated for the rest of our life. And finally, for my last word, thank God, you all say, this is from a Bill Wilson talk from 1965, printed in the Grapevine, January 1966. In AA, progress can be reckoned in terms of just two words, humility and responsibility. Our whole spiritual development can be accurately measured by our degree of adherence to these magnificent standards. Ever-deepening humility, accompanied by an ever-greater willingness to accept and to act upon clear-cut obligations, these are truly our touchstones for all growth in the life of the Spirit. They hold up to us the very essence of right being and right doing. It is by them that we are enabled to find and to do God's will. So that's it.
Alrighty then.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
Any questions? Comments in the form of a question? Concerns?
Concerns? Anything?
Jim Alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks, Leslie. In the amends process, and maybe you even already answered this question while you were talking and I just missed it. Do you ask, is there anything I can do to make this right? Obviously, if it's a money thing, it's pretty simple, you pay back money. But in other harms, and is there like somewhere maybe that a line may need to be drawn?
Oh, I think so. I have asked that, and I think it's a reasonable question to ask because the amends are to them, not to me. You know, I mean, we're told to be generous and you know, giving of spirit in that to make it right. But I don't feel I need to sacrifice myself. It depends on what it is. You know, if I owe money, that's obvious. if I've broken something, I can repair it. But I think there is some limit in causing harm to myself or harm to, you know, my family or people who I owe. I mean, we all have competing obligations that we need to meet. That's kind of part of life. It's kind of part of life. But I don't think I need to give carte blanche to someone I might have done harm to. And in fact, the book tells us that we don't. You know, the book tells us, I forgot to read that part, about, you know, as God's people, we don't have to scrape before anyone. We stand on our feet. We do God's will to the best of our ability. We do the next right thing to the best of our ability. I don't think that means, like, committing suicide on demand.
So a basic, perfect example,
you know, Jim, you weren't the greatest employee all of the time. So you know what? And I, you know, whatever. But I'll tell you what. I wash my car every Saturday for the next year. I mean, something like that. That's just ridiculous, right?
But somewhere
in the middle, there could be something. And that, you know, if I think, I probably do owe him something. What do you think? I can go to my sponsor and say, hey, this is what this guy wants me to do to make this right.
If I sponsored you, I would hope you would, you know, and to figure out what is appropriately owed. And I mean, you know, there are some people who will take advantage of our goodness. You might have heard about that in the world we live in. And we don't need an employment relationship of all things, you know. I made amends to a boss, and what he told me was, he said, I was wondering why you're starting to look pink again. You used to look kind of grayish yellow. It's like, oh my God, you know. So, okay, you know, he just said, just do what you need to do. And that, you know, maybe that boss was pushing it, and maybe if you're being asked something like that, to talk to your sponsor to figure that out might be in love with it.
You never know.
I would judge it by what's the nature of the relationship and what is your rightful obligation to the people that you work for. Thank you.
Next.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks so much.
Hi, Bridget.
I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. When you were talking about making amends to family who came from the same situation, alcoholic home, you know, we do all have our own version, our own objective thinking about what took place in the home. So when you talk about making amends to siblings or cousins or however, whatever, family members, and you said how difficult that was, did you have any experience where they would look at you and say, well, you know, I always knew you were always the problem in the family anyway, so now we both know. You know, I'm not saying that's happened to me, but I'm just wondering.
You sure were a B word, weren't you?
So,
at least,
you know,
I didn't steal your boyfriend, you know?
So when you talk about making amends to family members, did you find that was more difficult than your friend, your employee, or whatever? Thank you.
Thank you. You know what? They were easier up front, but more difficult as time went on, because I'm the only one who kind of changed. And I'm the only one who changed. And so therefore, I get calls to fix people's problems, which I can't. Calls to unload all the emotional vomit on me, and I can't take that. You know, I can't take that. You don't get to call me and then say, okay, thanks, bye, and I'm like a wreck, and you're, you know, I would, you know, part of my work life was I would listen to crime victims tell their stories. They paid me a lot of money to do that. And it was difficult because it was the same kind of taking in people's pain and just like I'm, you know, eating their pain. And I can't do that. And that's some of my experience with relatives has been like that, that they want me to eat their pain, and I can't. They have to fix their own pain. I can maybe help them. You know, there's finite ways we can help people. You know, we can listen, we can offer some direction. But, you know, if someone doesn't want to help themselves, then I can't help them. And it doesn't matter what my relationship is to them. And if they don't want to help themselves, they don't get to unload on me all the time. I wouldn't, you know, that's just how it, I see it. So I don't know if that's helpful to you or not, but it was kind of easy up front, but the living it out. Literally, I was like 30 plus years sober, and my mother was going on about some GD alcoholic, and I said, like, Ma, I'm an alcoholic. You know, that's kind of offensive to me. She said, oh, is it? I was like, oh, my God, you know. Jeez. Yes, it is, you know. And that's what I mean. You know, it's just, it's almost like, you know, when you go home and you're the little girl again, and you go home and you're the drunk again. I guess it doesn't matter. You're just, it's so we smile, and the only person I'm in control of is myself, so I therefore try to do what I think is right under the situation, you know, to be responsible and caring, and leave it at that. And sometimes they don't like it, and that's okay.
I'm Brent, alcoholic. I really enjoyed listening to you tonight and what you just said about if somebody doesn't want to get the help, there's nothing I can do. So one of my character defects is that I'm very defensive. I have this wall that comes up when I hear something I don't like. So I have a couple of people in my family who have said, well, you're in a 12-step program and I'm waiting for my amends. And it just, you know, and I haven't gotten them yet. It puts me in a situation where now it feels like an amend would be not truthful, not honest and open. So the moment hasn't come up to do that, but that is a, you know, I'm like the black sheep of the family, so to speak. Because
oh, me too. I think we all
good,
get
we're like
we all,
that.
We all get to be the black sheep of the family. And sometimes yeah. It's by getting better. But, you know, I mean, the book tells us when the time comes, we don't focus on them. We focus on us. And I'm generally better off if I don't chew through my head on what's all wrong with them, if I focus on me, the part I can do something about. So, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, if you can make like Charlie Brown's school teacher and just hear wah 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 wah, whatever, you know. there's something to be said for selective deafness as a survival strategy, and just let stuff roll us out. How nice, lovely sweater you're wearing.
Thank you.
Hi. How are you?
Oh, and we haven't even gotten to Kevin yet.
Yeah, okay. No, that's
good. Oh my God. Okay.
A couple of things. Okay. You talked about the reason that we do this is to restore our own character and integrity, which is, I think, very important and a great consequence of doing this step. One of the things that you mentioned was receiving amends.
I forgot to finish
yes,
the story.
You did.
Thank you. Because my dad, I grew up, thank you so much. My dad drank the whole time I was growing up. My dad did not get sober until June of 1980. I told you, I got sober in February of 1981, so there wasn't much of a gap. I was 26 when I came into the rooms. But a couple of years went by, and I was sober like 8-ish years, and this is kind of a weird, but it's true. So, you know, my dad worked at, he's dead now, so he worked at Braun's Baking Company, and as part, years ago, and as part of, he belonged to this little bunch at work where they chip in for lottery tickets. I'm sure we've all done that. Well, he was in a group of eight that hit for $8 million.
Oh,
yeah. And so what he did was he made amends to me. He didn't give me money.
Yeah.
Well, he sent me to Adult Child of Alcoholic inpatient rehab for 5 days at... It's Old Chit Chat Farms in Reading. I think they called it Karen Foundation at that time still. So that was what he did. And in fact, it was at a point of life, I mean, you know, thinking like, okay, where's the check and blah, blah, blah. And I have two sisters and I don't know what they got, but I know I got a trip to Chit Chat Farms, Karen Foundation for adult child, because... See, I was about 7-8 years sober, and that stuff was ruining my life. Those adult child issues. I mean, my second marriage was almost gone. It didn't last forever, but it lasted a little longer because I got better, and it served me well. So I really, really needed that. Didn't quite know I needed that. I had gone to outpatient counseling, and there he was. So he sent me on a 5-day vacation to Chit Chat, where I didn't go to rehab for alcoholism, but I ended up in a 5-day rehab for adult child of alcoholic issues, and that was his amends to me. So thank you, and I've gratefully accepted it, and it made a big difference in my recovery to have that kind of folded into the mix, and that kind of awareness folded into the mix. And to get that stuff out, that's like deep stuff. Now today, like 25 years later, now all this childhood trauma and stuff is, now people have discovered it. When they were doing that those years ago, this was like 1987-ish, I was at Chit Chat doing that. And it was a whole interesting bunch of people there. But yes, so those were the amends that I received from my father, who said, and aside from helping me get into AA, which I kind of count as an amends, and he may have intended it that way, but I wanted to tell the story about the money, too. He never wrote me a check after that either, by the way. But I was self-supporting by that point in my life, so I didn't need money to meet my daily obligations, you know. But, yeah, that's what he did. He sent me to get my brain put back, rewired. So thank you for reminding me.
Anyone else? Sorry. Did I wake you up? Hey, thank you.
Thank you.